Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 You have a change in the sloka board. Text 39 today, we did, so Maharaj did 36 to 38 or just 38?
Sankhyanam paramhanu Sankhyanam paramhanu nam
Sankhyanam paramhanu nam
Kalina kriyate maya
Kalina kriyate maya
Natata me vibhutinam
Natata me vibhutinam
Siddhita Siddhitam dhani kautisha Sankhyanam paramhanam
Sankhyanam paramhanam
Kalina kriyate maya
Kalina kriyate maya
Natata me vibhutinam
Natata me vibhutinam
Siddhitam Siddhitam dhani kautisya Sankhyanam paramhanam
Sankhyanam paramhanam
Kalina kriyate maya
Kalina kriyate maya
Natata me vibhutinam
Natata me vibhutinam
Siddhitam dhani kautisya
Siddhitam dhani kautisya
Sankhyanam,
Sankhyanam,
counting,
counting.
Paramanunam,
Paramanunam,
of the atoms,
atoms.
Kalina,
Kalina,
after some time,
time.
Kriyate,
Kriyate,
is done,
is done.
Maya,
Maya,
by me,
na,
na, not. Tata,
ta,
in the same way,
me,
of me. Vibhutinam
of the opulences.
Siddhataha,
who
am creating.
Andanhi,
universes.
Kotishaha,
by the innumerable millions. Purport. Oh, translation. Even though over a period of time I might count all the atoms of the universe, I could not count all of my opulences, which I manifest within innumerable universes. Purport. The Lord here explains that Uddhava should not expect a complete catalogue of the Lord's opulences, since even the Lord himself finds no limit to such opulences. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, Kalina indicates that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is within every atom and can therefore easily calculate the total number of atoms. However, although the Lord is certainly omniscient, even he himself cannot supply a finite number for his opulences because they are infinite. Sankhyanam paramanunam kalina kriyate maya natatami vibhutinam shijito nandani kotishaha. Even though over a period of time I might count all of the atoms of the universe, I could not count all of my opulences which I manifest within innumerable universes.
So this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam is further answering the questions that Uddhava asked, where Uddhava indicated he had some doubt as to the process that Krishna was explaining to Uddhava, I think it was in chapter 12. Krishna had previously explained to Uddhava that material activities, fruitive activities, are ultimately very limited in their ability to give happiness. That's the very nature of the material world. The results of material activities are very limited and temporary. And he advised Uddhava in his teachings to rise above the modes of material nature and search for spiritual happiness. So immediately following that conversation, Lord Krishna then explained, going directly to the point, he explained that real perfection lies in being absorbed in Krishna himself. So he pointed out that one should seek happiness in spiritual bliss, and then he pointed out that the platform of spiritual bliss is actually to be absorbed in Krishna, who is the full manifestation of Satchidananda Vigraha, eternality, knowledge and bliss. And therefore he described that you know, the other processes, karma, jnana and yoga, which are mentioned in the Vedas, ultimately can be discarded. They're not very important for one on that platform, although some of the principles within those Vedic instructions, which are applicable to the process of pure devotional service, can be accepted. And he gave the example that the gopis themselves are the best examples of those who are on this platform of Krishna consciousness, and that they didn't really follow any, you know, systematic process of karma, jnana or yoga. And yet, so he was giving, explaining to Uddhava by an example of the gopis, that they're situated in the highest spiritual bliss, and yet there was really no need for them to follow the other processes of you know, the Vedas, and therefore that substantiated his conclusion that, you know, one could give up these other processes. So at that point, Uddhava expressed his doubt. Now, of course, we understand that Uddhava's doubts are similar to Arjuna's doubts. These are Nichya-siddha devotees, eternally liberated devotees, devotees from the spiritual world, and they come down and perform pastimes with the Supreme Lord in order to instruct us. So, Krishna, by his pastimes, arranges for such devotees as Uddhava to ask these questions as if they have doubts, but the real doubts, you know, are ours, and the real answers are actually, you know, Krishna's answers to Uddhava are really directed towards us, who have very little knowledge, very little faith, and we are full of doubts whether, if we just absorb ourselves in always remembering Krishna and serving Krishna, that we can achieve the highest transcendental bliss. Because people of the material world, you know, they have a material understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and they can, you know, we consider him to be an ordinary person. That is the doubt. That's always the doubt that's there. Although
Krishna is explaining this essential teaching of the Vedas, just fix your mind on me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Our doubt is, you know, what if he's not God? You know, what if he didn't exist at all? What if he was just an ordinary person? You know, something, you know, like that. So Uddhava expressed this doubt so that after Krishna making this statement would then remove all of those doubts, and we could take instruction from that, and by that knowledge it would firm up our faith and firm up our understanding of how to achieve that platform, and therefore we could actually follow Krishna's instructions. Now Krishna went on to explain the process of mystic yoga. Now the mystic yogis, they also attempt to achieve a happiness which is beyond material happiness. The problem is that they try to follow that process without sufficient knowledge of the Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, and because they can't really derive a spiritual taste, ultimately they again become attracted to material enjoyment in the form of enjoying the material cities, which are byproducts of those of mystic yoga. So therefore he sort of shrugged aside that process as a means of attaining this constant meditation in loving devotional service on the Supreme Lord. The real benefit, though, there is benefit in the mystic yogi process, is that ultimately it does allow one to control the mind and senses to some degree, and by controlling the mind and senses, the yogis are then in a position, if they're guided by pure devotees of the Lord, to actually fix their mind on Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that benefit is there. But there must be that association of devotees to guide them towards Krishna. Otherwise, without that association of devotees, they can never achieve perfection. And lacking a real spiritual taste, their mind and senses will again, go back to material enjoyment, even if it is on a much more elevated platform of enjoying mystic cities. So, the best process, which Krishna describes for even better than the mystic yogi process for fixing one's mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is actually bhakti yoga. That's the best process. Krishna describes that in the Bhagavad Gita, actually. Who knows that verse? What's that? That's it? Yes. Of all yogis, the one who is always abides in me with great faith, who fixes his mind upon me, always remembers me, and engages in pure devotional service, he is the best of all. Krishna gives this process of bhakti yoga and the devotee who follows that as superior to all other practitioners and superior to all other forms of yoga. So Krishna is describing there the process of how to bhajan, or how to always be absorbed in the mood of serving Krishna with great faith and love while being constantly absorbed in thoughts of Him. So that is the process. As described by Srila Prabhupada throughout the purports of the Bhagavad Gita, that the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that in this age the best way to fulfill the purport of that verse and of the Bhagavad Gita is to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and to engage in Sankirtan, Nam Sankirtan. Process of chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, coming to the perfectional stage of chanting and constant engagement in the service of the Lord, there is a beginning of the process and it goes through different stages. So there is the sadhana bhakti. Basically we can describe that process as having three divisions. There is the sadhana of the conditioned souls. So they're practicing devotional service, but they're conditioned by the modes of material nature in the beginning to a greater degree, and as they become to the end of sadhana bhakti, practically that conditioning by material nature is completely destroyed. But those sadhikas practice sadhana bhakti, and that gradually removes the conditioning of material nature. Another division of bhakti yoga is the bhava bhaktis, bhava bhakti. They're actually liberated and they practice devotional service on a more ecstatic platform, but they're still considered sadhikas. They're still considered practitioners, even though they're liberated, because they're not completely perfect. Only the prema bhaktas are considered siddhas, or completely perfect. So they're the three different divisions of bhakti, which gradually bring one from the point of being always meditating upon the material energy and gradually coming to the point of being free from the influence of the material energy and being fully absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead with great faith, great love, and always absorbed in Him like this. So this is the process. So in the beginning, the process of devotional service can be divided into two, and that is steady and unsteady. So the unsteady practice of bhakti is called anishta, and why are they unsteady? They're unsteady because their knowledge of the absolute truth is meager. They don't have, they may be very expert in knowledge of so many things in the material world, but their understanding of Krishna is very, very little. So it makes it very hard, and of course their faith in Krishna is also very weak. So therefore, they're always unsteady in the devotional service. Gradually, they come to the platform of being nishta or steady, which means their faith firms up and their knowledge becomes quite substantial. Now, the difference is that those on the unsteady platform of devotional service, their ability to always be absorbed in thoughts of Krishna is very little. You know, there's some thoughts of Krishna and then it is broken by large gaps of
being again thinking of so many different material things. Whereas a devotee becomes more steady, you know, they can to some degree or another meditate and always be absorbed in thoughts of Krishna with great faith and love to a greater degree. They're not out of the woods, but certainly it helps them. So you can see that from the very beginning, Krishna is saying, always think of me, always be absorbed in me. This is the platform of spiritual bliss. And the process of sadhana bhakti gradually gives one the eligibility to do that. There's no possibility by material qualifications, with the mind always absorbed in conditioned and controlled by the modes of material nature, that one can just say, yes, I'll always think of Krishna. It just will never happen. So the process of sadhana bhakti actually, you know, gradually qualifies the devotees to always, you know, be absorbed in thinking of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, and gradually that thinking of Krishna pervades not just the time that one sits and chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, all the time that we may spend here together in Srimad Bhagavatam class, but it gradually, you know, pervades one's entire life and all of one's activities. Now, still, when devotees reach that platform, even of steady devotional service, they're actually still not qualified to think of Krishna directly, especially some of his more confidential and elevated pastimes within the Srimad Bhagavatam. And devotees certainly shouldn't imitate the very advanced devotees who can always be meditating directly upon Krishna's, you know, very confidential pastimes with his associates. Because even at Nishtha, even when devotees are on the platform of steady devotional service, because there's still, you know, some distraction by material thoughts for sense gratification, if one is actually meditating upon Krishna's very sacred pastimes and at the same time intermingling those thoughts with thoughts and activities of sense gratification, is very offensive. It's the same as sitting before Krishna, Radha Krishna, and having all sorts of strange thoughts and just going off in, you know, very offensive. So what happens, of course, is that devotees who artificially try to imitate very advanced devotees, trying to remember Krishna in such a way that's beyond their qualification, they actually become degraded because of, you know, offences to the holy name, ultimately. Therefore, you know, the devotees are recommended to follow a particular process by which they can gradually come to the point of always remembering Krishna directly. This verse today, of course, and all the previous verses leading up to this, a part of that process of practice which gradually leads up to the ability to meditate upon Krishna. So there's actually a proper sequence to hear about and meditate upon the Lord,
as we go through the different stages of devotional service. Krishna's pastimes can actually be divided into two divisions. There is eternal or nitya lila, and there is occasional or naimittika. So Krishna's activities in Mathura, his birth in Mathura, Krishna's killing of different demons within and, you know, outside of Vrindavan, Krishna's different incarnations as mentioned in the nine cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, these are all part of Krishna's naimittika or occasional lila, which, and generally they're lilas which Krishna manifests in the material world. They're eternal in the sense that they constantly rotate within the material world, but these pastimes don't necessarily take place in the spiritual world, whereas the nitya or eternal pastimes, such as Krishna's tending the cows, playing with his friends, dancing with the gopis, delighting with his parents, his, you know, astakaliya lila, his eightfold daily pastimes, these pastimes are actually the nitya lila. So the naimittika lila or the occasional pastimes, they're very, very important for devotees to meditate upon, because they actually clear away the impediments which are there in the heart, and gradually by clearing away those impediments one can eventually come to the point of being able to meditate, you know, more systematically on the nitya lila pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna. So devotees generally study more purposely those particular pastimes in order to clear away those impediments and in order to gradually promote themselves to higher and higher different qualifications in devotional service, and those qualifications in devotional service allow them to perform to achieve certain stages of perfection. We hear the terms Kanishta Adhikari, Majjhima Adhikari and Uttama Adhikari. Neophyte devotee, medium devotee and advanced devotee. Actually, it can be understood that way, but technically it means the qualification of neophyte devotee, the qualification of a medium devotee and the qualification of an advanced devotee, but the qualification to perform devotional service on those platforms. So, for instance, an Uttama Adhikari is qualified to engage in certain practices of pure devotional service, such as hearing particular, you know, hearing and chanting, nitya lila, what have you. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're an Uttama Bhakta. Just in the same way as one may, there's a difference between qualifying to achieve something and actually having achieved that thing. Still, these clearing of impediments from the heart gradually allow us to become develop higher and higher qualifications as a devotee, so that we can actually perform devotional service ultimately in the topmost way of being always absorbed in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his, you know, eternal pastimes, which is not possible to do, you know, unless one has that qualification. So therefore, there are the nine cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which devotees scrutinizingly, you know, study, and by studying them, taking the instruction, they become purified, they implement the instructions that Krishna gives there, and this way it gradually removes a lot of the obstacles that are there within the heart. These instructions on Krishna's incarnations include how Krishna kills the demons, protects his devotees, and establishes religious principles. So to give an example, there is the pastimes of Lord Sri Ramchandra in the 9th canto. Now, we can take, generally, there are many instructions, but generally we can take the instruction how Ravana was a personification of lust. Because that is, you know, an enemy which creates an obstacle for, you know, all devotees in the beginning anyway. So that past Sita, she represents Krishna's very faithful devotee. So Lord Ramchandra, he delivered, he protected his faithful devotee from this allurement in the form of, you know, lust, sense gratification, like this. So we can see that by taking shelter of the Supreme Lord in regular devotional service, that the Lord will actually protect us by slaying the demon of lust. Like this. So there are different, after reading that pastime of Lord Ramchandra, you know, you become very, after reading it, you don't think, Ravana is a hero. You think, Ravana, horrible, lusty creature. And of course, if there's anything within the heart that resembles Ravana, you think, I want to get that out of my heart quickly. Like that, you see. So, by each of these different incarnations which are there within the 9th canto, they actually root out, you know, the obstacles which are there within the heart, and that allows us to be promoted to literally relish the pastimes of the 10th canto. And the 10th canto, of course, has different pastimes, those of Nitya Leela and the occasional Leela. So of course, generally, devotees should not scrutinizingly study without qualification, without being, on the platform of free from material contamination to the, substantially, they should not scrutinizingly study the Nitya Leela. They should more scrutinizingly study, the 9 cantos, and then when they get to the 10th canto, those occasional Leelas, which again all have a particular effect of rooting out particular obstacles. Although it doesn't hurt for devotees to read those different pastimes as they naturally occur sequentially. So just like if one's reading the Krishna book, don't leave out chapters 29 and 33. You just read them. That's incidental reading. That is something different. You just read them as it comes up, even in the prayers of Lord Bhishma, he discusses, Krishna's association with the gopis. It's not like you leave those verses out. They come up incidentally, you read them, but don't hang around there too much, if the qualification is not there. Move on to topics which are actually more suited to devotees' qualification. Actually, I've got a nice list here by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I'll read out, this is a list of, he describes 20 obstacles to Braja Bhakti which are of great value to practicing devotees. This is from his Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita. Hearing how Krishna and Balaram kill these demons frees sincere devotees from the following impurities. 1. Patana, the false nurse, represents the pseudo-guru who may be embodied as a person or one's own conditioned mind. 2. Sakadasura, the cart demon, represents the tendency to carry on with bad habits such as lethargy and dullness that accumulate in this life and from previous lives. 3. Trinavata, the whirlwind demon, represents the false pride that arises from material scholarship, which gives rise to deviant philosophies. 4. Nalakavada and Manigriva, who became the twin Arjun trees, represent arrogant pride arising from aristocracy, which is rooted in madness for wealth. 5. Vatsasura, the calf demon, represents the childish greed that results in wicked mischievousness. 6. Bakasura, the crane demon, represents cunning duplicity, deceptiveness, and false behaviors. 7. Agasura, the snake demon, represents cruelty and violence. 8. Lord Brahma's theft of the cowherd boys and calves represents mundane activities and speculative scholasticism. 9. Dhanukasura, the ass demon, represents materialistic intelligence, which is the same as ignorance of spiritual knowledge. Kaliya, the snake demon, represents brutality and treachery. 11. The two forest fires swallowed by Krishna represent intracommunal discord among Vaishnavas. Pralambasura, the demon disguised as a calf, represents lusty inclinations and desires for gain and prestige. 13. The Yajnik Brahmana's sacrifice represents callousness towards Krishna caused by pride in one's position in the Varnashram system. 14. The humbling of King Indra represents demigod worship and the tendency to think, I am supreme. 15. Varuna's abduction of Nanda Maharaj represents the mentality that spiritual life can be enhanced by intoxication. 16. Killing the snake that attempted to swallow Nanda Maharaj represents the rescue of the truth of eternal Krishna consciousness which has been swallowed by impersonalists. 17. Sankachuda, the conch demon, represents desire for fame, name, and sensuous enjoyment, all on the plea of devotion. 18. Aristasura, the bull demon, represents the pride that arises from indulging in false religions invented by cheaters, the result of which is a neglect of bhakti. 19. Keshi, the horse demon, represents the feeling that I am a great devotee and spiritual master. 20. Vyanasura, the sky demon, represents associating with thieves and other rascals and with people who put themselves forward as avatars. So there's more information about that in Sri Krishna. That's actually from Sri Caitanya Shikshamrita. Srila Bhaktivinoda, of course, Sri Krishna Samhita also describes that is there. So, one should be very careful not to engage in singing bhajans, which are not appropriate, which also are beyond one's level of qualification. I know when I quite often do home programs amongst the Indian community, they've been singing this song and I couldn't quite recognise what it was, and they'd always ask me, can you sing this song? And I said, what is it? And they said, we don't know what it is. I said, well, what does it mean? Well, we don't know what it means, but it's our tradition, we always sing it. Anyway, I sort of listened carefully and then gradually I realised what it was. It's Sri Tikamala. You probably all know that, Jayadeva Goswami. Evidently they sing that plus other songs of Jayadeva Goswami in the Jagannath Puri temple as a daily function. I've heard that. So it's become somewhat of a tradition. So I thought, perhaps I will learn that, and because they keep asking me to sing it, perhaps I'll sing. So then, there's a quote by Srila Prabhupada where he says, he specifically mentions that song. You cannot sing that song. That's for Siddha Babas. Jayadeva Goswami also wrote Dasavatar Stotra. So we sing Dasavatar Stotra. You know, qualified devotees, of course, seeing Sri Dikamala. I read the translation. If you read the translation, I think there's one verse there which describes how Krishna, you know, drinks the moon-like radiance from Srimati Radharani's beautiful face. It's not particularly provocative, but that's enough to take it off the list. So, now you can imagine when, you know, here people commonly sing the song without any understanding at all. But if they do come across the translation and there's no knowledge of Krishna, they're going to take him as an ordinary person, and it can create havoc in their, you know, advancement in Krishna consciousness. So it's sort of something that shouldn't really be encouraged. A better encouragement is to sing Dasavata Stotra. So festivals, you know, another time where the remembrance of some of Krishna's even Nitya Leela, but they're exceptions. You know, we shouldn't skip over those festivals or not discuss, you know, Krishna's different Nitya Leela when it coincides with the particular festivals. But it should be done by devotees who can very carefully present that information in such a way that the many guests and general people who come can relate to that pastime, understanding Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his associates and manifestations, you know, of his internal spiritual pleasure potency and what have you. The devotees have to be very careful, but there are some exceptions, but you know, everything should be treated very, very carefully, individually and collectively as a movement. Otherwise, what happens is that people who meditate upon these Nitya Leela, they prematurely become preoccupied with what is my eternal spiritual identity, my Siddha Deha. And by doing that, that very thought, that premature you know, meditation on that subject matter is the very foundation of the Sahaja philosophies. So very quickly one will be swept off the path of pure devotion and into these deviant type of philosophies by prematurely thinking about things which one has no access into. So just to sum up, one other point, of course, is that there are other books outside of Srila Prabhupada's books. There are books by different Vaishnavas, some previous acharyas, some current. How do they fit into the whole scheme? It's the same principle. It's not that one can't read those books, one can read those books. But one should read those books according to one's qualification. It's not just because you have $20 that you go to the bookstore and something's available, you buy it and take it home and read it. And of course, you know, the people who run our different book sales, especially, you know, in the shops where they have a lot variety of books by other, you know, other people, they should be careful to guide, you know, people to some degree in what may be appropriate reading. Of course, some books, you know, you can purchase them knowing that it may be difficult to get later, put them on the shelf a couple of years later, 15, 20 years down the track, when the qualification comes, read it. Actually, that is Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, because, you know, he says that, you know, after 15, 20 years, devotees mature, then yes, they should, you know, certain aspects of Krishna consciousness, they should become absorbed in, if the qualification is there. And before that, he doesn't advise it. So the point is, of course, one must train the mind and the senses to, you know, become really strong, just like you, you know, develop the muscles in your body by constant practice. You actually make the mind very strong to free it from absorption in material energy. And when the mind and the senses are very strongly situated in that ability, then meditating upon certain aspects of Krishna consciousness, more elevated aspects of Krishna consciousness, is okay, and it will not be, you know, subjected to many, you know, offensive behavior, or, you know, while one is doing that. That's the danger. Ways of developing this strength of the mind and the intelligence, of course, is things like this. In this verse here and the verses previously, is by indirectly thinking of Krishna. This is a process, in one sense, indirectly, by thinking how Krishna is manifest in his various opulences throughout the material world. This is very good, because generally, in the conditioned state, we're, you know, inclined to think of things from a platform of intellect, logic, and reasoning. So this process satisfies that sense. We can apply our logic and reason and intellect to see how Krishna is manifested everywhere through his different material opulences. And also, it's actually a very effective preaching tool, because more so, the non-devotees or the innocent, you know, for them to, you know, hear that Krishna is a little blue cowherd boy running around the forest of Vrindavan, you know, with the gopis barefoot, you know, and here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they can't accommodate that idea. But if you even though, you know, Krishna's, you know, described that there, but they, if you tell them that Krishna is the light of the sun, they will enjoy applying their intellect to that, and their logic and their reasoning, and in this way they can, you know, they're attracted, and you know, their faith in Krishna will grow quite substantially by this process of giving them appropriate meditations, appropriate subjects for hearing and chanting, then their faith will grow. If we just direct them to hear and chant about things beyond their qualification, it will actually have an adverse effect. So while preaching, you know, meditating upon Krishna's opulences, the devotee is simultaneously perfecting the strength of their own mind to always be thinking of Krishna as well. And in this way, as the devotee, the preacher, as their mind becomes more and more fixed and their senses become fixed, they then become more and more qualified to, you know, read more elevated and hear and discuss more elevated topics of Krishna consciousness without fear of, you know, creating offences like this. So, therefore, you know, this process that Srila Prabhupada gave of, you know, practicing devotional service according to our qualification, hearing, chanting, remembering at the different stages according to our qualification, and always preaching Krishna consciousness, showing mercy to others, is the perfect process both for the devotees who are trying to surrender to Krishna and for the benefit of the whole world. And I'll just sum up with one last quote. This is a quote from Jiva Goswami. Well, actually, it's a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 2, text 8. Canto 2, chapter 8, text number 3. Jiva Goswami cites this verse, you know, to prove that the hearing of Krishna's different incarnations and opulences and what have you eventually brings one's mind that it can be fixed in thoughts of Krishna, like that. So this verse is spoken by Parikshit to Sukadeva Goswami. So Parikshit Maharaj says, Narrations concerning the Lord who possesses wonderful potencies are certainly auspicious for all living beings in all planets. O greatly fortunate Sukadeva Goswami, please continue narrating Srimad Bhagavatam so that I can place my mind on the Supreme Soul, Lord Krishna, and being completely free from all material qualities, thus relinquish this body.
So, does anyone have any questions or comments? Just quickly.
I learned about the mechanism. I really appreciate your very intellectual and nice discussion of today's topic. I was thinking how Prabhupada has given such nice things to unqualified people like us. Yesterday, the Jagannatha chapter was really very good example of Bhaktadhar was showing. So he was giving so much mercy to everyone in Bhairava.
Mm-hmm.
And how people were dancing. Gentlemen in front of you. At that age, he was dancing so nicely. So I was thinking of Lord Chaitanya first time when he was dancing 100 feet high and Lord Chaitanya was trying to hold him so that he doesn't fall down. So the ecstasy yesterday was so wonderful.
That's a very nice point. Actually, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is freely distributing this pure love of God on the most elevated platform, you know, of the gopis of Vrindavan to those who have no qualification to accept it. The only qualification is we just take shelter of Lord Chaitanya and his representatives. If we do that, then that prema bhakti is guaranteed. But if we try to take that prema bhakti from Lord Chaitanya without really taking shelter of Lord Chaitanya or his instructions coming down through Parampara, then although prema bhakti is being freely given, it is totally inaccessible for those who don't take shelter of Lord Chaitanya and his, you know, representatives, and follow very, you know, nicely their process that they've given.
Point you are telling, I think because we have such high standard of deity worship in Narmal temple, we should have 20 plays and videos of these, and we can show different people. That would be a great, excellent way of teaching to outside those 20 topics.
That's a fact.
You know, Bhaktadha, we should make such nice, I used to see the dramas, we should make videos of those 20 topics, what you are telling today, and we should show them each and every, whenever convenient, on Sundays and Saturdays, and there will be excellent teaching from Mangala Mahaprabhu.
That's the fact.
Because this is the excellent place. Prabhupada has brought Vrindavan, Jagannathpuri, and Mahaprabhu.
That was actually the process of the acharyas did that, constantly having plays and festivals for, you know, people in general and for the, you know, for the devotees. I know when I, for the first, 10 years at least as a devotee, every temple I stayed in, we had a play every week. If there wasn't a play, you know, there was something went wrong. But actually, every week, without fail, in every temple I ever stayed, there was always a play. You know, at the Sunday feast and what have you. Now it's more a rare occasion. But, you know, we should. It is a very wonderful, way to fix the mind for devotees and, the guests alike on Krishna. And those plays should be done, you know, very nicely. Perhaps, some of the plays, of course, that we used to do, you know, looking back, may not have been so appropriate, may not have been so nicely done. It was, you know, a little bit frivolous, but I think, you know, keeping in mind what we'd like to achieve, you know, in becoming Krishna conscious and helping others, you know, if we reintroduce that system of having regular plays and do them nicely, it's very, very powerful to help people and become Krishna conscious. Any other comments or questions?
By installing Mahaprabhuji,
Prabhupada
has done a great favor.
Yes, that's the thing. Any other quick questions coming in? Yeah.
But not all of us, you know, are in the teaching. So how? Because although we do read Krishna pastimes here or there, you know, because of studying our memory short and forget the study, and the mind is always telling us reading activities because we are neither reading or reading activities. So how do we absorb our memory and continue moving forward? We tend to forget them in the mind and just absorb in those pastimes.
Yeah, that's the practice. It's something that we learn that it should be done. We learn how it should be done, and then we apply ourselves to that process. It's a fact we have to be a little careful of, you know, going through our whole devotional life. Externally performing the devotional service and not coming to the point of always being absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, which should be suitable to the platform of devotional service that we're on. Srila Prabhupada mentions, I think it's in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, text 69, I think it says that, you know, this constant absorption in thoughts of Krishna while engaged, you know, in loving service is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. You know, Krishna says, always think of me. You know, this is, we understand, this is the essential instruction. Krishna is saying, surrender unto me. How do I surrender? Always think of me. You know, become my devotee, offer your obeisances, bow down like this. So this ability to always actually be Krishna conscious is something that should be developed. And we have to see, as we're going through the different stages of devotional service, we have to keep in mind this goal. That, am I becoming more qualified to, you know, be always Krishna conscious and to appropriately, you know, hear and chant about Lord Sri Krishna. That's how we measure our advancement. Not that, you know, now I'm initiated, now I'm a brahmana, you know, now I'm a temple president or, you know, temple commander, now I'm a GBC, now I'm a sin. That's not how we measure our devotional service. Because you can actually do those things and, you know, not be Krishna conscious. And the result is, of course, as we've seen, that even many devotees who obtain what appears to be an elevated platform of devotional service by their external, because the internal practice of being Krishna conscious has not been properly cultivated, they can actually have serious problems. And you know, apart from the fact that they have serious problems, they can't quite taste that, you know, spiritual you know, nectar which is there, you know, which Krishna is saying in this 12th chapter of, you know, 11th canto. He's saying, you know, don't look for material, don't look for happiness anywhere else except in total absorption in me. That's Krishna's instructions of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The rest of it, the rest of this 11th canto is just removing the doubt so that you actually take up that instruction. So, you know, as devotees, we should understand that that is the goal and how to achieve that goal, and then we should assess ourselves and do that. Otherwise, how can we preach? Because, you know, if we preach and encourage people to somehow be attracted to Krishna consciousness, but then, you know, that's the first part. But then if people come, then we've got to say, well, now you're here, now let us teach you to be Krishna conscious. But if we don't practice it ourselves, we can't teach it to others. Not only does it not fix us very nicely in devotional service, but it means that we can't fix others, you know, nicely. So it is a very important principle. But these things are described in, throughout Srila Prabhupada's books primarily, and you know there are further reading on these subjects by you know the various acharyas and by some of the current gurus in ISKCON. Banu Swami was here, of course, giving that very nice discussion on Harinam Chintamani. Discussions like that, you know, contain the essence of these thoughts. Because those instructions by Vanu Swami, of course, are very important because in the Harinam Chintamani, it is describing this whole process of Krishna consciousness, how one is internally going through the stages while chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So, you know, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is our principal means of progress, and by chanting in various stages, we gradually, you know, elevate ourselves onto the spiritual platform. So, but you won't see in Harinam Chintamani that, you know, by chanting Hare Krishna, the stages of advancement are that, you know, I have become, you know, the head cook in the kitchen, and you know, I'm the sankirtan leader, and I'm, you know, that's not mentioned anywhere. You know, it is something else. So I had to be very careful. Does that answer your question? All right, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.